podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's a 2001 special. It's 2001 week on the Anfield Wrap. I'll let you know what that entails. I have got Dave Carouche, I've got Rob Gutman, I've got Dan Morgan to talk about 2001. But before we get fully into 2001, there will be a gutter on Wednesday with Rob Gutman. And Rob, the trailing news for the week is Mark Ogden saying Liverpool have got 50 million to spend plus sales. 50 million. Suggests the comments, the timing of them suggests it's 50 million total, not including Konate. Was that your reading of it as well? I know you love the runes of these things.
Yeah, it was. So if you sort of reverse a bit, it says that the Liverpool possibly started the summer, and assuming Mark's right and he's an unimpeachable source, it's 80. That would sort of put our budget at 85 mil plus sales, and we know from the transfer committee game that we've done that would be a healthy starting point, which sort of suggests you don't know whether that got upped because of Champions League qualification or not, but it does suggest that they were prepared to go relatively large. Because do you look at Liverpool's possible outs this summer without sort of forensically drilling into what we might get for Divock Origi, but it's not hard to see Liverpool picking up 50 or 60 million in sales, especially if, as also rumoured, Naby Keita is available for transfer. You add 60-odd million onto 85, you've got 145 million, okay, 35 spent on Konate, another 110 million to spend. That suggests that Liverpool might look to do one or two really quite significant signings this summer. I certainly hope so, Neil.
I'm sure you do, Rob, but I'm sure we all hope so. Dan, you still can't quite work out precisely what the manager's wants and needs are going to be at this stage of the season. The manager's very much, he's not had much time to speak about it as we got to the end of the campaign, and he's just disappeared on day one. As soon as the window's closed, he's given absolutely nothing away, and he gave nothing away for a while there. What Liverpool end up doing, Dan, and what they end up prioritising, it does seem up in the air.
Harvey Barnes, Neil. He needs Harvey Barnes. He wants Harvey Barnes. Harvey
Barnes. That's a car, doesn't he, Dan? I've listened to your show.
Oh, fuck off. Suggestions, didn't enjoy it, Rob, to be honest. No, you're right. But one thing we know is that they plan well in advance with these things. And, you know, there's a lot of moving parts which have occurred throughout the roller coaster that was last season. So, yeah, they might have had to adjust slightly, but like Rob says, that's a healthy budget for a starting point. I think a lot's going to depend on what they can get back in and how early they can get it. And I think that will fall into wages. I just wonder, you know, the other thing we don't know really is what are the contract extensions they're planning. We've heard that Alisson and Fabinho are near enough sort of done. There's the big 2023 thing over a lot of players, including Van Dijk in the front three, the captain. So, you know, you've got to wonder where that falls into it too. But, you know, I'd imagine they've already got the chips placed somewhere or scattered over a couple of different places. It's just, like you say, it's going to be one of those where I think there's definitely another Diogo Jota situation where we're all going, where the fuck did that come from? And it's, you know, it's dropped on us on a Thursday in the middle of nowhere, and we're all sort of saying what just happened there, and no one's linked the player or no one's seen it coming. I think there's at least one of them.
They've got a picture of the captain behind us. On those transfer extensions, Dave, he is one that is a little bit up in the air. You get the impression they are going to prioritise Alisson and Van Dijk and Fabinho. But then on top of that as well is Mo Salah, and they're going to have to do something and make a bit of a decision with Mo Salah in the next sort of 6 months, you'd have thought, Dave. I mean, I'm all in now for them saying that he's going to be a Liverpool player for the rest of his career. But we know that that will not come cheap. Liverpool will have to pay out very big wages for that for Mo Salah.
I've got a feeling that we're going to lose one of them. One of them's going to go.
I think in the backs of people's minds, Rob, that's sort of present, I think, because Liverpool have held on to the big players for a while now. And you also wonder if there might be the desire for one of them, and we don't know who, to move on. That they may feel as though they've done enough here, because they've done an awful lot. If you look at Firmino, you look at Mane, you look at Salah, they've won the league and the European Cup. Are you very confident Liverpool will keep all three, or do you think that there's moving parts beyond which maybe the club don't even know at this stage?
On balance, I'm going to plump for I'm very confident we'll keep all three. I'd say if you rewind 5 years to a different sort of structure of European football in a way, pre-pandemic, pre the Spanish clubs managing to fuck their finances up, I'd say there's always vultures circling, aren't there? And when you're at sensitive stages with your players, with contract negotiations, and they're good players, the vultures will be there, and you'd be naive to think you can hang on to all your assets. But the vultures just aren't there at the moment.
I'm intrigued by Gini Wijnaldum to Paris Saint-Germain, Rob. In that,
the vulture.
Liverpool are a club you can buy from, knowing your player will have the sort of mindset and attitude that he wants. Don't talk about that manager, but Pochettino is. That just hit me today. That's why it's in my head, and I'm glad Dave's raised it. All of a sudden, I could see a world where Paris Saint-Germain offer 60, 70 million for Roberto Firmino because they feel he'll glue load of this up that they've got that they can't make work in Europe.
Yeah, that's true. As I was going to say, there aren't vultures, but there is a solitary vulture. And they're not the most attractive, although they can pay big, big money, because it's a shitty old league that... all disrespect intended to it. It just is not. And Paris Saint-Germain, it's not as if they're even acing it. You know, I could see Pochettino clearly, you know, he's the most formative part of his career as a manager has been in England. And during that phase, he's seen Liverpool as the exemplar team. So any Liverpool stars available who he thinks he can get, he'll want. I don't doubt that. But I'm not sure they'll want him. Let's put it this way. Gini Wijnaldum wasn't going to Paris Saint-Germain this summer if Liverpool really wanted to keep Gini Wijnaldum. And unless Liverpool want to see Bobby Firmino go because the 80 million looks tasty and maybe they'll do a deal on Mbappe or somebody else. Let's put it this way. I don't think any of the front three go this summer if Liverpool don't want them to go. Quite clear about that. If we see one of them beginning to move towards the door, it'll be because Liverpool want them to move that way.
Okay. Other things to keep your eye on before Gutter this week, which will be out on Wednesday. Emi Buendia has looked like he's going to go for 35 million, which is a really interesting price point for a player who's excelling in the Championship. Emi Buendia at 35 million, I think, might be a bit of a guide to where the market is for certain players. Harry Wilson can be two-thirds of an Emi Buendia, for instance. You can imagine how that conversation is had. But we will talk about all of those sorts of things on Gutter, and that will be out with you on Wednesday if you subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. But all the way through the week on the Anfield Wrap, we are looking back to 2001, to the season where Liverpool went into it, not expecting a great deal, expecting to be on a journey, but not expecting a great deal, and came out of it with Champions League qualification and three European trophies and some of the best nights supporting Liverpool Football Club that have ever been had. And that's why I've got Rob, Dan and Dave with me. Because they're also on a number of shows we've got across the quarter this week around 2001. I'll give you the full list as this show wears on. But it is worth saying, back then, we were all 20 years younger. Dan Morgan might not look like that's even possible, but that's true. And Dave, going into the 2001 season, I think it's an important sort of part to reflect on now, because you always end up feeling as though all success was always inevitable. Nothing was inevitable for Liverpool that season, absolutely nothing. They'd just fallen short the previous season. They'd found themselves struggling a great deal. And they needed to be able to pull themselves into position to be able to challenge for these trophies. So at the start of the 2000-2001 season, Dave, what were you expecting from Liverpool?
I wasn't sure, to be honest, Neil. Really wasn't. Obviously, it had been a long time since we'd won a trophy. Was it 95? I wasn't sure. I thought we'd made some good signings. I thought we had some. We had a good squad. Did I think it was going to pan out like the way it did? Probably not, if I'm honest. But we just kept winning games that maybe a lot of people thought, you know, that we weren't going to win. And we just gained momentum, and I think that League Cup final was played a really big part in that. It gave us a really good boost. It was a trophy, and I think we never looked back from there, really.
There are some key moments, Rob. I think everyone focuses on the end of that campaign, understandably so. It's one of the most spectacular run-ins in Liverpool history, to be quite honest with you. You know, they win and win and win, and they're all massive games, and they've just continually got to go again. But there's bigger games earlier in the season where they're finding themselves, finding the way. They beat Arsenal 4-0 at Anfield. That sort of just gets forgotten now in the heat of it all, in the momentous nature of it all. There's a really big win in front of very few people at Anfield in the third round of the League Cup against Chelsea 2-1. That goes to extra time earlier in that season as well. Fowler scores an extra time winner. From a Liverpool point of view, it's a really strong Chelsea team that they've got to beat. Then a few days later, they go and they battle Leeds United, but get beat 4-3. All the way through, before you get into that absolute run-in, which is the other side of that League Cup final, as Dave says, you can see them gaining belief in themselves and the manager and what they're about.
Yeah, the signings are interesting and bedding well. We have, isn't this the Nicky Barmby derby season as well?
Yes.
That's in and amongst that. That gives us a hell of a boost. That is also, I've got in my mind that some of these seasons, forgive me if they blur, but we beat Villa in the League Cup. Is it the quarters? And Steven Gerrard is sensational.
That's the season after.
Gerrard is the key signing this season because he really, really comes of age. He was to go on to get better and better, but as you said, in that Arsenal demolition, he's a pivotal figure. We're starting to see some of those magical Gerrard goals and those performances. We go, he's not just good. He's not just a young lad who's going to nail down a place on our side. He's world-class, potentially, this boy. You could see that there was a lot of depth in the squad. But also, although I didn't have high expectations, I mean, what the object at the beginning of that season was Champions League qualification. And then we'll see what happens. Because we'd come quite close. The season before had been a strange one, but where we'd failed to qualify for the Champions League to finish third, I think, on the last day with a defeat at Bradford. But actually, we'd had quite a good recovery season there. It's an underrated season that falls apart in the last five games. Had Liverpool sort of matched their power in the last five. I think they'd win, like, draw two and lose three of their last five. They qualified for the Champions League and finished that for the season prior quite strongly. And I think, I'm not saying there would have been title talk, but I think there would have been more ambition. But it ended in a really, really flat way. But I think it sort of diverted us from what potential was building in that squad.
The potential was building in the squad, Dan. Going through that season, there's some big wins early, as I was saying a minute ago. There's a 4-0 at Derby at Pride Park, where Liverpool just destroy them. Frankly, Heskey gets a hat-trick. Berger scores a great goal. And yes, Derby were, it was a poor Derby side, but Liverpool were able to put them to the sword in a manner of a top club, if you know what I mean. And for us growing up, you're a few years younger than me, but not that many. For us growing up, sort of seeing Liverpool behave like a top club. I was at Pride Park that day, and I just remember coming off the ground thinking, my God, the sky's the limit for these lads. And that was in October, but I remember thinking, if they can play like this, they can beat absolutely everybody, and you can't live with Heskey when he plays like that.
I think there's a couple of things in that. I think it shouldn't be overlooked how many teething problems they have in the first couple of months. So there's the 3-0 up at Southampton, they end up throwing that away and drawing 3-3. And that's a really frustrating game. They get rolled at Arsenal where they get two sent off. They get a hiding at Chelsea. And then there's a couple of really weird results in there. There's a 0-0 at home to Rapid Bucharest, for example. There's a stumble over the line against City at home. And all of it felt a bit bedding in. It felt a bit like there was a lot of things to sort of settle down in terms of players coming in. The Ziga thing was still ongoing until sort of late August. Around that time, and it wasn't until around that Derby game that you see something click in them, and I think Heskey's a massive factor in that, Neil. I'm glad you mentioned that, but some of those results, there's Derby, there's a 1-0 against Leicester, they beat Slovan Liberec, and then there's the Barnby Derby, as Rob's mentioned, and I think around that time, I remember the DVD, I think Owen does an interview after the game and he says, you know, the manager keeps telling us 2 points a game and we'll make Champions League. And that's, you can, you know, you can clearly see that the sole priority is that, you know, we have to, and we laugh now about this current Liverpool side maintaining that they have to get 100 points to win a league title. This was a side that was adamant it had to go 2 points a game to get Champions League qualification. And back then, that felt like a lot. You know, that felt like a big ask. And it felt like, you know, getting one of those three places, as it was at the time, which was something that, you know, was going to be monumental for Liverpool if they did it. What transpires is you start as that first half of the season goes on to just cast half a glance on the cup tournaments and you start thinking, hello, there's something in this. And, you know, there's something that is clearly between the teeth of the players as well, because, you know, when you move on to November, there's some really big games. There's Olympiacos. We go and beat Stoke 8-0 in the League Cup. And you're starting, like I say, you're just starting to think to yourself, yeah, they're gonna go through a few sort of harsh lessons as the season goes on. But you immediately fancied them in the cup games. They were very built for knockout football, this team, and I think they were able to sort of use that as the season went on as well.
They start slow, Dave, but as Dan says, by the time they get to the October, the November, the autumn, the winning games, and you can't, you know, now, not least because the way the season finishes and you focus on the running and they're the bigger matches, so we're all right to do it. But Heskey is so important to them in October, November, December. He scores the hat-trick at Pride Park. He scores the winner following game at home against Leicester, his former club. He scores the go-ahead goal against Everton. You know, Barnby gets the opener, but Everton equalised quite quick and everyone forgets that, and it's Heskey who makes it 2-1. He scores a couple of goals to kill the game at Anfield against Coventry late on. He scores, you know, Liverpool need to beat Olympiacos. He scores the opener, against Olympiacos. There's all these games, isn't there, Dave, where now, because we can remember Owen's goals, we can remember Robbie's impact in the running, we remember Gary Mack. But the truth of the matter is that in this early part of this season, Heskey is arguably Liverpool's most important player, certainly most important attacker.
For me, he was the most influential player for me. He was used like, how can I describe it? He was like a battering ram. The ball would be played up to him. He'd hold it off. He was that strong. He took so many challenges. I mean, the Rome away, I thought he was outstanding. I really did. He was a key player. And maybe unheralded in some, you know, some people's eyes, but for me, he was definitely my favourite player of that season. He was just, you know, he scored key goals, but it was his work rate as well. It was how he held the ball up. All of that was just absolutely, you know, instrumental for me.
I remember coming away from games, Rob, that season, away games especially, laughing about how you felt like Emile was winning his own flick-ons. But he was effectively at times so much left to be the sole striker. Certainly when we're trying to see games out, and as I say, I mean this more in the unheralded periods of the season, but where he was just left to effectively find a way to be a one-man attack, to occupy two centre-halves. And then on top of that, there was the goal return, because it wasn't, and we've got to be careful because he goes on to become a bit of a non-scoring striker, not just for Liverpool, but elsewhere where he goes. There was a period where at Liverpool, he was doing all the stuff where he occupies defenders, all the stuff where he brings people into play, and he was going at the rate of a striker who scores better than 1 in 2.
Yeah, you know what? No, we've all talked about Heskey down the years, haven't we? But in various different ways. In a way, it's one of the strangest careers I can look back on. It's Liverpool careers. I remember him as a young striker at Coventry, who seemed to have it all in front of him. He had a rep like a young Drogba. You wanted to get him, we got him. He played the tail end of the season before, did okay, didn't really score a great deal. But then he seemed to catch light very, very quickly in 2000, 2001. And I entirely agree with Dave. By coming into that Christmas, I was thinking, I know I was lauding young Gerrard and Ireland, but you go, yeah, he's our most important player, isn't he? He's our best player. I remember Houllier resting him, I think, at Anfield against Ipswich. I'm sure it's before Christmas. Again, apologies if my memory's wrong. And I think we draw or lose 1-0.
Yeah, we lose 1-0.
Yeah, and you just think, rotate anyone but not him. Do you know what I mean? Because we just looked, and then with a bit of hindsight, isn't that it? We just looked half a side without him. He was frightening. I was going to say, was he like peak Drogba that year? In a sense, he was, only slightly better, I'd say, because he was quicker. You know, he was fucking brilliant. And his finishing is sensational. You know, he absolutely puts his foot through a ball in a way, I haven't really seen a style since then. This great sadness is it was for one season only. He was a one-season turn. Because although I'm not saying he didn't have his moments post-2001, in a sustained sense, he never, ever came close again. But maybe that's enough. You know, you've often said about like a great artist who've only had two or three hit singles. Well, fucking hell, that's enough, you know? He had that season. And what a season. It is just one of the great individual Liverpool seasons. I'm not going to say it's quite Suarez in 2013-14. It's not a million miles away from it, is truth be told.
The one thing he doesn't get, Rob, I'll come back to you on it before I move on to those big games around Christmas. The one thing he doesn't get is what Fowler gets, even though it's not quite big enough for Robbie. What Owen gets, and it is more than big enough for Michael, is the goals in the final. That's the one thing he misses, Emile. So, he scored a great goal at Goodison Park late in the season, but it's the opener in a 3-2, and everyone rightly remembers the Gary Mack free kick. I still sort of feel as though that if there was one thing, you know, there's a couple of things I'd like to have in this most remarkable season, 20 years on, we're still celebrating it, we're still loving it. If there's one thing I'd quite like there to have been, it's maybe that Robbie's goal in the UEFA Cup final is the winner, rather than the horrible late header and then the own goal.
Yeah.
And that big Emile gets is his day on the big stage where he scores the winning goal in a final for Liverpool, because his season had everything else.
Yeah, I think what was I remember thinking at the time was that he faded in the last quarter, fifth of the season. He wasn't alone, by the way. They all faded. Actually, as a man, they faded. Only Gary Mack, who comes into it, could you say improved, got better with each game in that phase. Gerrard was running on empty. I mean, they all summoned themselves a bit against Alaves. I mean, Gerrard racing clear like the cultish Gerrard we'd seen earlier in the season to score his goal. We hadn't seen that, Gerrard. I mean, look, watch Gerrard against Arsenal in the cup final. He's dead. You know, they are all dead. And Heskey in particular, I thought, burnt out is a bit strong because he's hugely contributing. As you said, he scores in the Gary Mack derby. But he wasn't quite the player in the run-in. But then, we talk about mentality monsters in the modern squad. That was the most mentally strong season performance I saw from a set of Liverpool players. Incredible, really.
As Dave was saying earlier on, Dan, they find themselves. So just before Christmas, they win in the League Cup fifth round against Fulham at Anfield. They then go and win at Old Trafford. They beat Arsenal the game after 4-0. That win at Old Trafford with the Murphy free kick, it felt like a weight off everyone. It always felt to me as though Houllier had his things he felt he needed to do. And one of the things I think he felt he needed to do was to build a team that would win at Old Trafford. And it wasn't pretty the way in which they did it, but my God, they win that game and then they decimate Arsenal and they looked absolutely terrifying at that stage. They looked like they'd found themselves.
I remember vividly his Sky interview before the game, and he says, Houllier, we will win at Old Trafford one day. Now you think about a statement like that. We've laughed at statements like that from an Everton point of view. But you think of a statement like that from the Liverpool Football Club, considering the sort of ghost that Man United had sort of emerged over them in that time, and the beast that United was. That's quite a statement for any Liverpool manager to make. And he goes and does it that day. And I think you're right, Neil. I think the lift they get, I think the belief they get from that. And I think also, you know, I think, again, to correlate to sort of recent seasons, more recent seasons in our history, I think this was a team that was almost built to peak around that time. I think it was a team which had its legs around that time in terms of sort of December, January. And I also just think to pick up on a point that a couple have made there, that I think it's clear that certain players are just finding little patches of form over certain points of the season to get them through five games. And, you know, there's the consistency throughout the season. Gerrard, Carragher, Babel, the centre-halves are all brilliant in different ways. But, you know, McAllister's the obvious one who finds a purple patch towards the end. But know, you can argue Owen has a good start and ends, but around this time, I'd say, you know, Murphy really has a good spell. Fowler's coming in and doing little bits here and there, even though there's some debate around his future. And we start to sort of get a good look at what Didier Mann can bring to this side as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think he has a couple of niggles first few months and doesn't really get any momentum. But I think from around this time when Liverpool start needing to grind, you sort of roam it away and those really sort of gnarly European results, a man really starts coming into his own. And I know the other thing as well, I think when Liverpool get a grip of something around this time and really feel that they can go on and win some trophies and qualify for the Champions League, I think the system really helps, because, you know, they're really rigid, they're really well set up in terms of how they sort of defend and mark and stuff like that, as has been mentioned. But I think the manner in which they can find ways to sort of ground out and do the whole sort of going to Tranmere and playing all your homegrown lads and knowing what it's about in certain games is something that really complements the squad the more it goes on. It's a squad that learns lessons, I think, and I think that's where it sort of how it ends up in the place it does.
It learns lessons.
Sorry, Neil. I think that's a really important point Dan makes about that team. The echoes of it in the current Liverpool side, it was a team that had goals from set pieces. They had a team full of captains and a team full of goals. I lost count of when we got a free kick sort of within 30, 40 yards of goals. The number of lads who could step up and you go, he'll put a fucking ball in. Mm. And you look to Gary Mack, you look to Patrick Berger, you look to Christian Ziege, Danny Murphy, obviously. They could directly score goals from free kicks. And also they could put a ball in. And then on the end of that ball would be Sammy Hupia, Marcus Babbel, Emil Heskey. Do you know what I mean? And Robbie Fowler was fantastic in the air. There was endless array of possibilities from set pieces. And that rigidity allowed us to get platforms in games and we could break tight games with our set pieces.
One game that which doesn't go tight, but the back-to-back, the second one very much does, Dave, is at the end of January. I've mentioned at the end of December they find something, and then at the end of January they find something else. They have the 5-0. Against Palace. We've got a show coming up solely about that. They have the 2-0 against Leeds United. We've got a video coming up about that as well on the Anfield Wrap this week. But the 5-0 and 2-0 are back-to-back, Dave, and I think we sort of lose that. They batter Palace and they absolutely embarrass them at Anfield. I'll play them in every aspect of the game. And that win at Leeds United, that was the first time you heard the song, or at least I heard the song in the ground, you know, that we're going to Cardiff twice. That win against Leeds United that day, it just felt as though this side at that point was on the crest of an enormous wave.
Yeah, it was massive, because memory's a bit sketchy. Leeds do the double overs in the league, did they?
Yep, they do. They beat them, the double Leeds on Good Friday, but they've done us 4-3 as well before
that. Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, it was massive, yeah. It was absolutely massive. It was a great game, you know. I don't know if people expected us to win that game, but we just outbattled them. Just thought we were immense at every part of it.
There was, with that Leeds game, Rob, there was an unbelievable air of tension around it. Liverpool got the opening goal on 87. They get the second goal into injury time. It was. It's the celebrate. It's one of those ends that when you see the video,
I was in it. Were you?
I was.
I think all four of us were in it, and that's my point. My point was all four of us are in this end, and it was absolutely overwhelming that day. But you could cut it with a knife before then. It was oddly quiet by about 80. You think there's 10,000? You think the song would be endless? But it wasn't, because everyone was engrossed with this game. That's one of the things I remember. It was one of the tensest football matches I've ever been at.
You've got, yeah, I mean, we were in a serious phase of rivalry with Leeds United then. You know, we weren't the best two teams, but we were vying to be the next best team between us. The mantle of the challenger to United and Arsenal was up for grabs. Newcastle had faded, and it was between us and Leeds, and they'd just seen us off for the Champions League the season before. The rivalry was so tense. That 4-3 ratcheted it up, that, you know, sense of injustice. And it was a very tight game, that one. But I remember, it's weird to score. You get a winner, sort of, what, 3-4, you know, 87th minute, you think, 3 minutes, 4 minutes of injury time, it's going to be a tense period, but you do it, you score again.
I've not really seen that very often that happen. And I do remember it was fucking feral. Do you know who it really, really was?
Dave, the Heskey goal was absolutely unreal. The crowd was absolutely bubbling in that Leeds United game. It was going off. We've just gone 1-0 up. The Heskey goal goes in. And it's like it doubled down on the chaos of it all, Dave.
Yeah, it just... I don't know. It just... Things started to really, really happen. I mean, I think it was Rob said about. I remember the game outside. It was really moody. It was they thought you know they'd already beaten us. They thought they really you know they'd spent some money that season, hadn't they? They really thought they were amongst the big time.
I think the anxiety stemmed from that 4-3 was fucking anguish.
Yeah, it was pain.
You could not put anything on Sky without seeing Mark Viduka scoring a goal.
Yeah.
You could put The Simpsons on Sky One and they'd show an advert of Viduka scoring against Liverpool.
Yeah.
It was harassing how bad it was. And the manner in which, you know, I went to both of those games and to be in that end in the league game was tormenting. It really was. And
we were dead good.
Yeah, we were, and it was a really hard game to lose. It was a really hard pill to swallow, and I think there was a lot of ghosts lurking around that game when the cup tie comes around, to the point where you didn't want to tempt anything. You did not want to tempt a thing, and that's why when Barnby scores, it goes off, but when Heskey scores, my God, I think I was in row one, like right behind the goal as well, and I just remember. It being the thing where at that point there's too many things telling you that this has too much momentum to be let go.
Yeah,
you've got too many things happening for this to all mean nothing, and it's almost a little bit sort of 18-19 in that where you're going, how have we got 97 points and we're not winning anything? And then you sort of get to the Barcelona game in Barcelona happens and you go, this is right, this is football's sort of equilibrium coming back to make things right and merit them, because all of these things have happened. It cannot be left in vain. And that sounds incredibly sort of idiotic and romantic. But when these things happen in a dressing room, we only see it externally from a supporter's point of view, but when they happen in the dressing room, you try telling those lads that, you know, they're not going to go on and do those things because, you know, imagine the weigh-in because we were there, but imagine that dressing room when they go back in and bury the ghost of that league game and that Viduka 4 goals and stuff. And yeah, it was sheer momentum.
But Dan, you also felt like there was two sets of fans there. Thank God we were caged apart because we'd have eaten each other alive.
Oh,
it did remind me of times where you'd win somewhere and you think, I'm just going to live in the moment now and enjoy this. Once we're outside this ground, we are dead. Do you know what I mean? That was one of the last times. You don't feel like that as modern fans, do you? I used to feel like that as a kid watching Liverpool. You get a goal at Old Trafford, you win at Highbury, and you come out and think, I don't know if this might be the last thing that happens to me alive.
But, yeah.
And do you know what? It heightened the tension. That was one of the last times I felt like I do not know what waits for us outside this ground, but thank God we fucking won. It was great.
Next one that does that job and I'm sure has that sort of feel, Dave, is the 2-0 at Roma. All this season, when you think back on it, these building blocks are in place. And what Liverpool do in Roma that night with Michael Owen getting those two goals, it is absolutely enormous.
It's just the timing of them as well. I mean, you know, I thought, talking like of moody places to go, I mean, I was there for 5 days. I can remember Valentine's night. There was an alcohol ban in the city and we're sitting in a restaurant. He said, you can have a meal, you can have a glass of wine, but your dinner. We're sitting with Italian Lotharios, you know, with the getting this water. And we had the bottle of wine, which we managed to drink in about 3 minutes. And we said, are we all right? I told you can only have... But, you know, moving on to the game, again, really moody. I remember half time. There was Lazio fans in there, and they were battering each other, and Liverpool were all cheering. They were like charging each other on the terrace. But to score those two quick goals after half time is just absolutely, you know, phenomenal. Really, really. That was a game probably we weren't expected to win. I think Roman were doing well in their respective league that year.
Top, Dave.
And to go to their own backyard and put in a display that we did. And I remember again, Eski for me was absolutely outstanding. He was just a battering ram. He was fouled. He was brought, you know, and he was key. And two lovely goals. You know, it just made, as I say, I was there a good few days. It just made it so special.
There's a part of it, Dave, where I wonder whether or not they took Liverpool a little bit lightly. You know, from their point of view, they're top of it. They're top of Italy. They're doing brilliantly. You know, Serie A, the number one team in Italy over the course of that season. And also that might have been their priority a bit. But I do think it's worth saying Liverpool at that moment had very little European pedigree, did we? You know, there'd been a bit of a run to get embarrassed by Paris Saint-Germain going back a few years in a Cup Winners' Cup. But apart from that, we hadn't done anything. So I do wonder whether or not they took us a bit lightly.
No, definitely. I agree with that. They definitely did. They were just... I think they thought they'd roll us over. I actually thought we were under more pressure at the home game than we were at the away game. The away game being, you know, it was both, but it felt a lot more comfortable. I don't know. We just done an absolute number on them. You know, yeah, it was just brilliant.
But the home leg showed you how good they were in the scale of our achievement, actually.
Yeah.
Because you were shocked. I remember feeling shocked at the end of that. I thought, how the fuck have we done this? Because we didn't really expect that to happen.
No.
And you thought, well, maybe they... And then when you saw what they tried to do to us at Anfield, you went, bloody hell, we've knocked out a good team here, a really good team.
Yeah.
The other thing about those games, Rob, is the speed of them. It's a bit that gets overlooked. And also going to them, you know, you and Dave were at almost every match, if not every match. I was at the Stadium of Light for Sunderland the weekend before, didn't go to Roma, was at the City game, was at the second leg against Roma, and then there was the League Cup final on the 25th. You know, we go to Roma on the 15th of February. We play there 10 days later. We're playing Birmingham. We played two matches in the middle, Manchester City in the fifth round of the FA Cup that we've won 4-2, and getting through against Roma. And you can sort of lose your head in this. You know, the running starts so far back. There's so many big matches for Liverpool game after game.
We played 11 matches, didn't we, in 30 days, something like that.
But the mad thing is, we have the squad that can cope with it. You know, Robbie Fowler's feeling left out at this stage. You know, and we're not forgetting that, but he's grateful to get his game. I mean, we're rotating people across cup finals, so Robbie starts the League Cup final, doesn't he? Who doesn't start? Owen doesn't start.
Owen doesn't start the League Cup final, no.
Yeah, so Robbie started, which was sort of a boost for him. And then again, he doesn't start in Dortmund for that final. But yeah, the games were coming thick and fast. I mean, do you know who must have taken it out of more than the players? Well, they took it out of them. It was Gerard Houllier. You know, we look at what he later went on to experience. In fact, in the very near future from that point. But that man had to switch on and focus and prepare teams. And he was making... But, you know, he was a real sort of pioneer of rotation. He wasn't the first to have done it in our league, but boy, was he doing it a lot. And he clearly, when he built that squad, he made those signings. You know, we hadn't been used to seeing six, seven lads sat in. You know, remember those photos we saw at the beginning of the season? And then didn't Lippmann end up coming in January, hadn't he?
Yep.
Houllier was buying, fuck all that, you know, Klopp or Mourinho, I like to work with a confined group. Houllier, I want a lot of footballers because I want them to play a lot of matches, and we're not going to suffer because of that. I mean, we did in the end, I think, but the testimony is he got us over the line through his mental strength, concentration, preparation, and being able to change the team when he needed to.
And also, Dan, that they learn lessons. They have the League Cup final disappointment where there's the great early goal from Robbie, cancelled out by the late penalty, which was a penalty, and they suffer through extra time. One of the things I always took from that extra time was how good Didier Mann and Marcus Babbel were. They were the experienced footballers in that Liverpool side at that moment. They were the experienced ones. There was them and there was McAllister. But no one else really had that much in terms of pots that he could go away and point at. For me, in that extra time against that Birmingham side in that final, those two hold this Liverpool team together. Haman hits the post at one point when he almost petulantly fires a free kick, like he's annoyed with the referee. But the two of them just keep Liverpool on an even keel to be able to get to penalties and win the penalties.
Yeah, the lessons thing's huge, I think, in this season. I think there's a real mentality about them that says, you know, once they've learned something the hard way, they back themselves then to use it to their advantage in the next sort of situation. That's where I almost think there's a part of them that is collectively all right about going to penalties in both the FA Cup and UEFA Cup final. And both being like, you know, in both of them, in their own circumstances, if the situation presents itself, we're fine with this. You know, and I think there's something further. I think they clearly learned the lesson of what Everton do wrong against Tranmere and everyone else do wrong against Tranmere. Externally looking in, outside looking in, for example, when they come up against them in the quarter final. But I think around this time, when they win the League Cup and they get back to the business of what would then be classed as the run-in from March on, I think it's really interesting that, so for example, they don't concede more than two goals from that Leeds game in the league to Alaves in any fixture.
Yeah.
So their ability, like I say, the makeup of them, how they're built, if this was a team that had to go out and score goals, then I think it would have struggled. And I don't think it had big problems with goals. I think Heskey, Owen, like we've said, purple patches at different times. But I think if it was a team that had to go out and score for whatever reason, then I think it found itself at times really, really struggling. Leeds at home on Good Friday is a really good example of that. But it's a team that was able to back itself, that the minute it got a goal ahead in a game, and despite the odd anomaly like the League Cup final, it could sort of back itself to see it through and win and find a way if it got its noses in front. And there's a lot of it at that time, I think, knowing what it has to sort of hold on to.
Backing itself, Dave, is epitomised in that Carragher penalty in the League Cup final. His run up, it feels in my mind like he almost ran up from the halfway line.
Started a bootle.
We knew exactly where he was putting it, Dave. And it was a phenomenal moment. You know, he wasn't fancied for it by a lot of people for something like that. But his assurance and his confidence, I think stuff like that just breathes across a whole team.
I'll be honest, I wasn't confident. As you say, with the run up, wasn't at all confident. You just like it, that was such a, again. It was such the way it went with them scoring late, equalising late on, and then they had a claim for a pen themselves, didn't he? Anti Honcho, was it? Challenge, and I can remember I had no fingernails left, and then you see Carragher, and you're thinking, I just wasn't confident. And as you say, the run up,
he pulled the socks down, which was mad.
Yeah,
he took his shin, he's out and pulled the socks down, which I just always remember as being this fucking wild. That, why has he done that?
No, it was all in, Rob. We've taken this as far as, you know, as far as those massive matches where they win the League Cup final. Then after there, you've got Porto across the two legs. They do United at Anfield with the brilliant Gerrard goal and the Robbie celebration. Then they do Barca. There's the Everton, the McAllister derby. My point about this is that on all the way through this season, this is this show and why I wanted to do this show at the start of this little run where we've got so many shows about so many of these massive matches that Liverpool go on and have. Towards the end of this season, we've got them all coming on the Anfield Wrap this week. The reason why is because it was about as much fun as you could ever have supporting a football team. You've seen Liverpool win more league titles than me, but you've seen Liverpool win league titles, and you've seen Liverpool win a European Cup in the very recent past. You've seen Liverpool get to a European Cup final, and there were so many genuinely momentous, amazing moments. But the thing about this season is, firstly, it's that bit surprising. But secondly, it's the way it builds and builds and builds. And it was a phenomenal, phenomenal season to go and watch Liverpool. It could possibly be the most fun you've ever had.
Well, yeah. I started first watching the Liverpool game live in 1978. And so I watched it all the really good stuff, winning all those trophies. But obviously there'd been that post 1990, there'd been really very little to shout about. But I remember saying to my mate Julio, who we both know, went to every game with me that season. I said, you know, I felt guilty saying, I said, this might be the best season we've ever experienced. I said, this might be the most, this, and I used those words, this is the most fun we've ever had. I think I said, I've never enjoyed a season more than this, because it just kept coming at you. It was such a relentless series of experiences. And now you're rattling off these games, I'm going, were they all in that season? You know what I mean? I've lost it. I can't believe they're all in that season. It's like the best of the Beatles was actually an album. Do you know what I mean? they were all in that season. And I'm thinking about since, and we've had some good seasons since and in recent times, but as a body of work, you said the greatest Liverpool album of all time, if Liverpool FC were a band, it's hard to look past that one for the sheer number of hits in it. It was wonderful to experience.
Davis, little things like towards the end of the campaign, they beat Spurs and Anfield, and then they go to Highfield Road, beat Coventry late on, brilliant McAllister free kick, then a couple of days later at Valley Parade. I was at that one. And the atmosphere at Valley Parade that day was absolutely unbelievable in the Liverpool end. You know, it's everywhere you look, there's another astonishing moment, another brilliant game, another thing that just felt as though it was contributing towards this massive whole that this campaign was.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Gary Max scored about four goals in about five games, didn't he? towards the end, and they were all like key goals. I think towards the end of that campaign, didn't we win every game bar, was it Chelsea? We drew 2-2.
Yeah.
We won every
game. A great game as well.
Yeah. We'd won every game. We did everything that was asked. It was just like it was getting, and some of the games you know you could see they were tired, and you know, and the rotation of the squad. I mean, you know, so I think was it the City game in the cup that he go with
Fowler and Littman?
He rested the two that played in Europe, hadn't he? And he went with the two. Yeah, I mean, the rotation of the squad was just unbelievable. Everyone and a man delivered. They just kept on going. It was just, and as it turned out, we needed to. We need, what a season in terms of what we won, but getting into that European, that Champions League place was just, you know, that was probably what we started out at the beginning of the season. Everything else was a bonus, but some bonuses. It will be a season that will live long in my memory. And I think, you know, there had been some really quiet times. I mean, I was fortunate. I saw them lift the last league title. You know, I was very lucky, and there were times when we were sort of quite a distance off the pace. And so put in that season that we put in, and how key was that into the rebuilding again? You know, just phenomenal.
I'll end with you, Dan, in terms of this, before giving everything a plug. It's hard, you know, I've said before about our age, you know, Rob and Dave had seen so much by that sort of point and had these fantastic times. For me, it was just rambunctious. It was just this constant adventure. You were crisscrossing across the country, didn't know where you were going to end up next, but you were watching the Liverpool sides. That was about winning. And it's always going to sort of define that for me. It was about winning. It was about winning trophies. And it was about watching footballers do incredible things. It was just a tremendous year.
It was, I was 14 and I was following Liverpool a lot at that age. That's where I was getting a lot of my education in terms of life, in terms of, you know, socialising and stuff. And it was the Liverpoolness of it that gripped you. It was sort of faith against your will. And that, like I said before, that can sound really sort of romanticised at times, but when a season like this gets you in its grip, you get so immersed in this sense of this has to mean something when it's coming towards its crescendo. And the Liverpool romanticism element is mocked and stuff like that, but we have it because we've lived experiences like this season where we
absolutely
go,
absolutely,
this has to be part of something bigger. There's no way in which this can peter out to be meaningless. And you believe that from a very early point. And then you go on this journey with these guys and these teams down the years, different teams, all different, but you're part of the same journey. And it's such a drug. It's such a draw that you can't then move away from it. And like I say, I was 14 years of age that summer going into 15. And that was it. That was Liverpool having me by the bollocks for the rest of my life. And they will do for that very reason. I'd have loved them anyway. But, you know, let's not make no doubt about it. There's a lot harder labours of love than there is supporting Liverpool Football Club when you look back and have seasons like this. And it's that, the thing that sticks out again more than anything is that it's that sense from an early, a very, very early stage that you feel the buzz. You feel a buzz in the club. You feel a buzz in the city. You feel, you know, you feel that effervescence just light you. And there's no place like it. It really just gets you. And those times when that happens, you know you're onto something because it's this club.
Indeed. And we're celebrating it all the way through this week. Just looking at lots and lots of games. Everton, Barcelona, Charlton, Arsenal, Crystal Palace, Tranmere, audio and video for all of that. We've got interviews with Alex Miller. We've also got a free interview with Phil Thompson that'll be getting put out in place of Weekender on Friday. There's a Gary McAllister interview that's coming out to you on Tuesday as well. We're re-releasing the Moments in Time that we did. That's knocking around. We've even played FIFA 2001. We've got Dickie Felton in to do his treble from that season, from his experiences of that season. We've got a video that's looking at the flags. We've also got all the other stuff we have on the Anfield app. We've got Gutter, we've got AFQ, we've got the Friday night. All of that is to come over the course of the season. We're even having a little look at the Euros, talking Reds on Tuesday and on Thursday. But this week we are focusing in on the time of our life that we had 20 years ago, Liverpool's treble winning season. Thank you very much to Rob, to Dave and to Dan. That has been the Anfield Wrap this week. Do strap yourself in. There is everything you need to look back upon one of Liverpool's great seasons coming. Sports Social Podcast Network.